Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Newport, Rhode Island, and earned a master's degree in hospital administration from Carnegie Mellon. He has been in hospital administration for various children's hospitals for 30 years, from Egypt to Peoria, Illinois, to Vancouver, British Columbia, and now Detroit, Michigan. In January 2014, he was named the president and CEO of Children's Hospital of Michigan. His name, Larry Gold, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Pasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Larry Gold, the president of Children's Hospital of Michigan. Larry, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, thank you so much. I'm honored to be here with you today.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Absolutely. I have the fortune of growing up in a place that everybody else calls vacation, and that's in southern New England in Rhode Island, a small town called Newport, which goes from about 25,000 in the wintertime to about 125,000 in the summertime.
Everybody's heard about this Newport, Rhode Island. Tell us what it's like.
So Newport, at the turn of the last century, was where all of the robber barons, all of the industrialists, all of the very, very wealthy who had not red but blue blood run through their veins, built summer homes. And I don't just mean summer homes. I mean Italian castles, that one was nicer than the next, than the next, than the next. But the Astors and the Vanderbilts used these homes as a status symbol of their wealth, and they only used them for 8 weeks out of the summertime.
And now the Golds use it for 8 weeks out of the summertime.
Right. Well, the Golds really never had one of those houses, but I did grow up in the house that John Jacob Astor, who went down in the boat accident, he built for the captain of his sailing ship.
Speaking of the Golds, tell us about your mom and your dad.
I'm happy to. My father was a very proud man. He owned gas stations in Newport. Every time he had a child, he and his wife Barbara had a child, he built another gas station. So we didn't have 12 kids. There were four in the family, but my mother said that made him so anxious to have a new child that he had to go out and make himself busy, so he went out and got another gas station.
Larry, what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
So from my father, it was all about relationships, and it was integrity. Everybody knew him. He knew everybody, and it wasn't about selling gas or selling tires. It was about building relationships. And for my mother, the learned one in the partnership, she really was the one who said to me, I don't care what you do when you grow up, just make sure you're the best at it.
How was it, Larry, you got into hospital administration?
That's an interesting one, Jack. My mother was chronically ill my whole life. She had kidney disease. So we spent a lot of time in the mecca of healthcare every summer. She spent about 2 months every year in Boston in the hospital, trying to get her medications and her kidneys under control. And I didn't realize what an influence and impact that it had on my life. I have two master's degrees. One is in social work, and I ended up in an internship in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, at the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. That was my first introduction to children's health care. Really, really liked it. Liked the environment, liked the mission of taking care of kids. And I think it was those early experiences in the hospital in Boston that got me to where I ended up there.
Early in your career, after 3 years at a children's hospital, you take a job at an adult hospital. and you only lasted 1 year. Why?
Yeah, that's correct. I started out in children's health care, really enjoyed it. It was my wife, Pam, who said to me, you know, there are very few children's hospitals in the United States, and there are a ton of adult hospitals. If you go down this route, you're going to really narrow your opportunities. Why don't you try adult medicine? I said, Pam, you know what? That's an excellent idea. So I found myself in a job at a hospital in Pittsburgh called West Penn Hospital. Did it for about a year, worked with cardiac patients. Hated it, Jack. And I came home after the end of the year and said to Pam, I can't do this anymore. She said to me, why? I said, because everybody in adult hospital acts sick. They're all sick. It's depressing. You go into a children's hospital, kids are running around, they're playful, they're running up and down the corridors. I don't want to work in adult health care. She said, you know, fine. You tried it. Let's go back to children's health care.
How has hospital administration changed in the last 30 years?
You know, it's changed dramatically. I can tell you that every single year of the last 30 years, I've had at least one employee say to me, when is all this change going to stop? It's enough already. Can't we just stop it? And I smile and say, you know, hold on to your hats, because it's all about change. I think the one constant for me, Jack, my entire career in children's healthcare, is one question that I ask myself that takes care of the answer about 90% of the time. And the question is, what's in the best interest of children and their families? And if I use that as a guiding principle, that's the constant. Change everything else you want, but leave that as the guiding principle. And it works for me.
We're talking to Larry Gold. When we come back, we'll ask him, there are 7,000 hospitals in the United States of America, but only 45 are solely devoted to children. Why so few? And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Larry Gold, who has led a number of children's hospitals. Larry, only 45 children's hospitals in America devoted strictly to children. Why so few?
So it's a really good question, Jack. When you think about it, 45 hospitals, there are 7,000 hospitals in the United States. Less than 1% are children's hospitals, when in fact a third of the population are under 18 years old. So the numbers don't quite add up. And there's a very good answer for it. First of all, most kids are born healthy. They have all of their limbs, their heart works just fine, so they don't need the sophistication and specialization of a children's hospital. So who do we take care of? Well, we take care of kids who are born with congenital problems, birth defects, some people call them. For instance, heart defects. 1 in 100 babies is born with some malformation of their heart. So that's a population we care for. We also care for kids who acquire illness in the first few years of life, cancer, diabetes, orthopedic problems. Those are kids who we actually see for a long period of time. Kids with chronic illnesses, we may see them every week or every month until their 18th birthday, where they graduate to adult care. So that's a large population. We also see kids who have acute incidents, a car accident, something that they come in, we fix them, they go away, they go home, and that's it. We also, unfortunately, see kids who are the victims of society's ills, kids who are the victims of child abuse, sexual abuse, neglect. And of those three, neglect is the most insidious because it leaves no physical imprint, the most difficult to find. And finally, we see kids who, if their parents knew that they were putting them in harm's way, they wouldn't do it. So that's called preventable injury. In fact, it's the number one killer of children in America today. Boating accidents, biking accidents, car accidents, situations in which we believe that if we continue to educate the community, we will see less of those preventable injury. When you add all of those up, Jack, it's hundreds of thousands of kids every single year that we see.
Larry, you were a key advisor on the design and construction of the world's largest pediatric cancer hospital, a 200-bed facility in Cairo, Egypt. Tell us about that experience.
It was a fascinating, fascinating experience. It was several years ago before the revolution, and every hospital in Egypt is owned by the state. A group of pediatricians, pediatric subspecialists came together and said, we want to build a brand new hospital, and we're not going to ask the state of Egypt for one penny. We're going to raise it all ourselves by donations. Well, donations had never been something that anybody heard of in Egypt before, but these people went about it. In fact, the name of the children's hospital is actually a number. It's called 73573. If you look it up, you'll go to their website. That's the bank account of these people raising money, so that kids all over Egypt can donate their pennies and their nickels and their dimes. They built a children's hospital. The chairwoman of the board was Suzanne Mubarak, the then president's wife, and it's the largest pediatric facility, and care is free. So their number one priority is all the children in the Middle East who have cancer. But they'll see kids from all around the world with pediatric cancer. It was a fascinating, fascinating experience for me. They do things a little bit differently over there.
I quote you now, quote, I went to Vancouver, British Columbia in 2007 because of a senator named Barack Obama.
That's exactly right. So this guy was running for president. And when you read early on about what he wanted to accomplish, he talked about health care for every single citizen in the United States. He talked about a universal health care type of system. I knew absolutely nothing about universal health care. And I would tell you that the presidents at other children's hospitals didn't know about them. We knew what we saw in the attack ads, in the scare tactic ads, what universal health care is all about. So I started to read about it, Jack. And I realized that we are the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have some form of universal health care. Thought, you know, they called me from Vancouver. There's an opportunity. We were in a good place. Our kids were out of the home. We loved Canada when we visited. We loved Vancouver when we went skiing and thought, what the heck? So I saw it as almost an educational experience, a sabbatical, that I would go to immerse myself in what universal health care is all about.
Will it happen in America? And if so, what will it be like when we have universal health care?
That's the $64,000 question, Jack. I think every country has a little bit different structure, a little bit different form of universal health care. So, for instance, in Canada, it's a private health care delivery system, just like here. What's universal is the insurance system. Only a single-payer insurance program. That's what universal health care is like in Canada. Do I think that we'll move there? I think we're moving there today. I think, you know, of the 42 million people that hadn't had health care before Obama came in with his plan, more and more of those people now have health care. Medicaid has been increased. There are exchanges that are developing all over the United States. So we're moving in that that form of universal health care.
Malpractice suits. Will we ever get to the point where we limit the payouts and therefore reduce some of the cost of that?
Yeah, I think one of the misnomers about litigation is just how expensive it makes the healthcare system. And the answer is less than 1% of the costs of healthcare in the United States are because of lawsuits. Now, having said that to you, I think the physicians, doctors across the country do defensive medicine. A mother comes in with a son and says, my son has headaches. I want an MRI. And the doctor said, you know, your child really doesn't need an MRI. Her response is, my next door neighbor's kid had headaches and they got an MRI. I want an MRI. Because of always playing defensive medicine, we probably do more testing. We do more testing than in other parts of the world with universal health care and with lawsuits that aren't anywhere as litigious or as large payouts as we have in the U.S.
Larry, you're one of the greatest salespeople I've ever met in my life. And the proof of that is time after time you go to your wife, Pam, and say, honey, we got to move to Pittsburgh, Cairo, Peoria, Illinois, honey, British Vancouver, Columbia. And then late last year you say, honey, new opportunity, we're going to move to Detroit. What attracted you to Children's Hospital of Michigan?
You know, because there are so few children's hospitals in North America, when there's an opening, Jack, all 45 CEOs at the other children's hospitals know about it because they get a call from a recruiter. So on a regular basis, I come home and say, honey, I got a call from a recruiter. And her first question always, always, always is, where? So about 6 months ago, I came home and said, honey, I got the call. And she said, where? And I put up my hands over my face so I didn't get smacked, and I said, Detroit, Michigan. And not only, Jack, didn't she smack me, but she got a big smile on her face. And I thought she'd gone over the edge. We'd heard in Vancouver what was going on in Detroit. And I'd also mention here that, you know, Vancouver's always listed in the top three best places in the world to live. And in fact, it's an amazing place to live. My wife's background is in economic development and urban revitalization. So that's why she got the big smile on her face. She said, this is a laboratory. This would be an amazing place to go, especially at this point in Detroit's rebirth, their renaissance. Let's go to Detroit. So, I got on the plane and went for the visit, and Pam did as well, and we fell in love with Detroit.
We're talking to Larry Gold. When we come back, we'll ask him about Children's Hospital of Michigan. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Larry Gold, who was named president of Children's Hospital of Michigan in January 2014. Larry, tell us about Children's Hospital of Michigan.
The Children's Hospital of Michigan is a jewel in the crown of this city, everybody should be proud of it. It is the third oldest children's hospital in the United States, a little over 125 years old. So, Jack, just think about the number of kids who have gone through that institution. I can't go anywhere, meet somebody new in Detroit. They ask me what I do for a living, and 9 out of 10 people, their eyes get big, and they have to tell me a story about their child or their niece or the guy down the street's kids. Everybody has an experience with the children's hospital. So it's a sense of ownership that Detroit feels and Michigan feels with this children's hospital. It's impacted everybody's life.
Larry, here's my story. As you know, I've been on one of your boards for years. It's been my honor. And what screams out to me every time I walk through that hospital is the feeling of love, patience, hope. There's a culture of love there. How did that happen, and why did that happen?
So children's health care is different, Jack, in so many different ways. It just is. I have been doing it long enough where I've tested this over and over and over again. It's a different gene. When you think about it, families are coming to us in a time of crisis. They are turning over the most precious thing that they have in their whole lives to strangers and saying, you need to help me parent. So it takes a special person to recognize what kind of commitment and obligation that is to help parents in a time of crisis make their children better. It's not for the faint of heart, because you're not only taking care of that child, but you're caring for the whole family as well. That's part of the specialness. You know, children's hospitals are a place of celebration, because most kids, the vast majority of kids, they get better and they go home. We get to celebrate with them. What could be finer than that? I will tell you, and not sugarcoat it, that some kids don't get better. Some kids pass away at the children's hospital. But as tough as that is for staff, they also recognize that they're taking part in the most intimate experience those parents, that family, will ever, ever go through. And there's a professional satisfaction. It takes it out of you, and you're emotionally exhausted at the end of it. But you've helped a family go through the very worst that they'll ever, ever face. That's what's special about the Children's Hospital.
Larry, you lead a team of 2,000 teammates. You serve those 2,000 teammates, 650 nurses, 450 full-time doctors. Talk to us about this team of 2,000.
So it's not just about the guy who's sitting with you right now. I don't have a white horse. I don't have shiny armor. This is about every single one of those 2,000 teammates coming to work every single day and doing a little bit better for kids and families of Detroit and for Michigan that they did yesterday. And what I mean by that is we can move mountains, but if I bring my shovel, Jack, if the other 2,000 people bring their shovels, we can move mountains for the kids and families that we serve, which means we can have breakthroughs in research. We can teach new residents and subspecialists to go out into communities and practice. That's what it's all about. That's what putting everybody together, seeing a single mission, and that is what's in the best interest of children and their families every single day.
Another thing that strikes me when I walk through Children's is it's the United Nations. Your teammates and their patients from countries all over the world. What's that like?
Yeah, so that goes back to the question you asked me about Egypt a little bit ago. There are vast differences, certainly in Cairo, than there are in Detroit. But one thing is universal wherever you go, that it's all about kids and their families. And I don't care what language you speak or how long you've been in Detroit or how well you are oriented to North America. If you practice in a children's hospital, you're focused on the well-being and health of the child. If you can't speak the language, we'll provide interpreters for you, of course, because parents have to be advocates for their kids. But that's the universality of taking care of kids in Detroit or Vancouver or Peoria or Pittsburgh or in Hartford or in Cairo. It's about what's in the best interest of the child.
In an earlier segment, you mentioned that one-third of our population is 18 years or younger. So you see a lot of millennials. Talk to us about millennials.
So as a workforce, millennials really do present some unique challenges for us. In fact, when you see it in the context of the entire workforce, you have you've just mixed a lot of demographic groups into one pot and asking them to work as a team. So you have people from other countries. You have people who are in their retirement ages. You have people who are in the middle of their career, and you have millennials. Millennials have less patience than the rest of us do, Jack. They want things to happen right away. They don't see the ladder the way that you and I saw the ladder growing up. Our parents told us that if we work hard, if we focus, if we're honest, we'll go up that ladder. Millennials aren't going to wait quite that long for that to happen. They want to see change in a much more rapid fashion. So you have to provide them with opportunities. You have to stimulate them. You have to give them the kind of paycheck that they want. It has to happen much, much quicker in a more concise way. But they have huge amounts of energy and they're entrepreneurial in spirit. They see things that I don't see. So it's not just about programming the clock on the microwave, that's over. They've taken on huge new initiatives that can help change the way that we take care of kids and families at children's hospitals across the country.
So you're telling us, Larry, that an oxymoron is a millennial who's a Chicago Cubs baseball fan.
Ooh, I didn't say that. You said that. although I will tell you, Jack, that everybody wants to know who I root for. It's baseball season now. I grew up in Boston. I went to school in Pittsburgh. So I'm not going to tell you, but when Boston or Pittsburgh comes to town, I can't lose. Same thing for hockey, and same thing for football. I got most of my bases covered.
So, another thing you're dealing with is work-life balance today with your employees. Doctors, when we were kids, they were 7 by 24. Talk to us about work-life balance.
Much, much different than it ever was before. Let's take teaching programs, for instance, and we have both feet immersed in teaching. Our residents, by law, can only work a certain number of hours now. When you and I were growing up, the residents worked 24 hours, three or four days in a row. We now know that, although that was rites of passage to become a doctor, probably wasn't the best medicine in the world. People need to rest. They're making critical judgments in a very short period of time, and they haven't slept for 3 days. It doesn't work so well.
You mentioned also earlier about donors at this Cairo Hospital. This community is one of the best giving communities in the whole world. And a number of families have been phenomenal to Children's Hospital. The Ford family, the Frankels, Giannopoulos, the Helpies, Rosens, etc., etc., etc. Talk about some of these families that have just loved Children's Hospital.
Those families that you just mentioned are still very active with the hospital today. Cynthia Ford sits on the board of the hospital itself. The foundation is very, very active. We could not exist as a children's hospital without the support of the community. Children's hospitals across this country invented fundraising for hospitals. They do it better. They've done it longer than anybody else. You know, somebody once said to me that children's hospitals without foundations are vanilla. They're like khaki. And then you give the support of a foundation which represents a community. You turn the vanilla into state of the art.
We're talking to Larry Gold. When we come back, we'll ask him what it's like to replace a living legend. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Larry Gold, President, Children's Hospital of Michigan. Your predecessor, Herman Gray. His dad was a surgeon who was not allowed to practice at several hospitals because of the color of his skin. Dr. Gray joined Children's Hospital of Michigan in 1976 as an intern. He was a pediatrician and a child and family advocate, and he's been the president since August of 2005. And he's so legendary, he's on billboards throughout this town. What's it like replacing Dr. Herman Gray?
Well, I can tell you, my first drive home, I was on the lodge and going north, and I saw that billboard. And my first notion was, is that what they do for presidents at this children's hospital? They throw them off. I've never been on a billboard before, but it really does speak to his legend and how much of an impact he's had over the years in both clinical practice, management, and administration. Everybody knows him, Jack. He has integrity. He has respect. He really has changed the face of children's health care in this community and impacted the lives of children for decades to come.
Speaking of the lives of children for decades, you've been around thousands of sick children and SIDS, infants, for 3+ decades. What have these young people taught you, Larry Gold?
They teach me every single day. and I mean that literally, there is an expression, the child is father to the man. The child is father to the man. And what that means for me is we put these kids through all kinds of very painful experiences over both short and long terms. And Jack, they don't hold a grudge. They have tears in their eyes, but they know that you're trying to help them. They have gratitude in their hearts. They have wisdom in their eyes well beyond their years, and they're ready to get back up on their feet and start all over again. Their fortitude to get through what they're facing, whether it's heart surgery or transplant or cancer or orthopedic surgery, and then start all over again and really redefine what normal is in their life. If adults could do that, it would change the face of the earth. That's the kind of spirit that I see every single day. And I'm fortunate and gratitude to be a part of that. It's why it's been a magnet to me for the last three decades.
When you're around these children's families, they refer to this child as their hero, their teacher, their angel from God, their inspiration. Larry Gold, how do you explain that?
I think, again, it's the power of childhood. I once met a woman, a mother, who had a child who was 3 days old. And she had just been given a death sentence for her child. She had a child had a heart problem that wasn't repairable. And the cardiologist had just said to the mother, your child probably has 30 or 45 days to live. 30 or 45 days, Jack, not years. And he got up and he walked out of the room and the mother started to cry. And I said, what are you going to do in the next 30 or 45 days? She stopped crying and she looked me in the eyes and she's holding her baby and she said, I'm going to go home and our family is going to love this child as if we had 60 years. We're going to take a lifetime full of love and put it into this 30 days. That's what we're going to do. So think about that for a second. If we live life like that, if this community, if our society lived life like that, think about how different a place it would be.
When we were young, there was no childhood cancer. Larry, why do we have childhood cancer?
So we did have childhood cancer when we were young, Jack. We didn't know what it was, and maybe we didn't diagnose it, and maybe the child died, but we did have childhood cancer. Do we have more than we had then? Absolutely. And they use a term called multifactorial, that it's probably several reasons coming together in the environment, in our genes, in our history, in the food that we eat, in the air that we breathe. We are seeing an increase in childhood cancer, but I will tell you that we're also seeing an increase in survivorship. So if we were sitting here 30 years ago, 80% of the kids who were diagnosed with cancer would die. Sitting here today with you, Jack, 90% of the kids who are diagnosed with cancer survive. So look at, in a very short period of time, how we've been able to turn that around. Now, they still have special needs that we'll see them for at the Children's Hospital until they're 18 and beyond. And we know that because of some of the treatments early on years ago, some young adults are acquiring other illnesses as a result of that.
Larry, are there miracles still today?
Absolutely. I say that to you without hesitation. I've walked into a room of a child who has just now been pronounced dead, Jack, and turned around, walked back into the room 30 seconds later, and the child's breathing. I've seen doctors give parents a 1% chance of survival who are alive today. I've seen things happen that are not explainable with kids and their ability and their strength to be able to gather all of the energy they need to beat illnesses that nobody ever gave them a chance.
Speaking of losing some of these young heroes, one of the hardest things on a marriage is the death of a child. I believe that the divorce rate in that case is 80%. Larry, the few couples that make it through, how do they do it?
That's a really good question, Jack, because considering what they've just been through, the next thing they don't need to go through is a loss of that relationship and divorce. So for that 10 or 20% of the folks who do, I think it's a number or a combination of things. People who make it through keep the essence of their child alive. For those first few years, it's almost like they are alive and they're present. They talk about them all the time. So for those who are listening who believe, let's not talk about the child who died, just the opposite. You need to talk about that child and the mourning and the grief they're going through. A lot of families volunteer their every waking moment to the children's hospital and come in and spend time there in memory of that child to inspire others to do it in the memory of the child who died. And finally, you have to have great supports around you. You have to rely on others, which means when it's really hard to say three simple words, I need help. I think those are the components of what makes the worst thing in your life easier to get through.
As our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Kids aren't faring in America as well as they did 5 years ago and 10 years ago and 20 years ago. Miriam Edelman, Children's Defense Fund, every year puts together a report about how kids are doing. And in most of those indicators, they're doing terribly. I think if all of us picked one child, just one child, to do something for, and if your heart inspires you, do it once a week. And if you don't think you have the time, do it for 5 minutes the next child that you see. You know, for kids, it's not the big things in life. It's the little tiny things in life that make such big deals. So spend 5 minutes or 5 hours with a child that you didn't yesterday.
Larry Gold, we're all watching a miracle, the rebirth of Detroit. And you and Pam deciding to come here is another key part of that. So thanks for coming. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Jack. You keep up the great work as well.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn. Believe in yourself.